It's 16 minutes past 10 o'clock, and I'm just trying to get the volume levels right. There's been some monkeys in the studio this morning, quite literally. I think they broke out of the park and arrived and reset my desk completely. And I'm just... David Hula is with me. David Hula is a knife maker, among other things. And he's a very, very interesting dude. And I like him a lot. So, welcome,
nice
Dave.
I appreciate it.
Nice to have you on the radio, on the wireless.
No, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
And let's just get into it. You're a knife maker. What sparked your passion for knife making? And how did you get started in the craft?
I'm going to say it like this. I'm one of those persons who were cursed very early on in life and knew what he wanted to do. I just find knives fascinating. So my dad was a bit of an avid collector. So I went to quite a few knife shows as a kid. I got my first little Swiss Army knife in nursery school. So probably about 5 or 6 years old. And I always generally have a knife in my pocket since then. And I've always just loved knives, but knife making was never a hobby I could pursue. You know, you had to get a job, you had to get tertiary education, you had to do all those kind of things, be responsible with your life. So I decided chefing was my next option. I loved food as a kid. I was always cooking at home. I cooked from a very young age, and I got to play with knives all day. So they just worked so well for me. So I went with the chef route for the first half of my life. So once I matriculated from school, I went to hotel school, qualified to be a chef, worked overseas for a bit, and then eventually, I think probably about 18, 19 years, moved down to the North Coast for my wife, who got a job down here. And then I started chefing around here. Then I decided the chefing industry wasn't quite for me anymore. You know, you got to choose wife or life sometimes.
Ah, And you chose right.
I did.
You chose right. But then how did you... Well, I mean, clearly okay. There is a link between chefing.
So I've always loved knives. And I always wanted to make, and I had a chance encounter conversation with a friend of mine, old Rogan, who used to run a little fishing outlet down at the bottom of Belito. And he told me about a local guy, Terry Smith, who was doing a bit of knife modification. So I bumped into Terry, chatted to Terry, and I saw Terry managed to do quite a bit with a little bit that he had in his workshop. And I thought, you know, this is actually within my means. Because when I was looking at knife making equipment, it tends to be extremely expensive when you first sort of look at it. But he managed to get it going for a couple thousand rand. So I decided to just get cracking. So halfway through, towards the end of 2014, I got my little workshop set up, and it literally was a tiny little space with a little vise, and now I've got a double garage just full of equipment. So I started knife making, and I just loved it. I would work my full-time job, and then I'd be in the workshop from as soon as I could till late at night. One of those obsessed artists, if you can call it that. Then halfway through 2019, I thought, you know what, the world's looking pretty stable, everything's going well, there's no going to be nothing that goes wrong, I'm going to go full time. So I did.
Wow. So who would you say or what have been your influences in terms of your design the most? Has it been traditional bladesmiths or nature or modern chefs?
I was a bit of a strange kid. While all my friends were playing Duke Nukem and Quake back in the day in the late 90s and stuff like that, I was in my dad's study with my nose in knife books. So I generally like the more classical shapes. With my chefing background, I always found the Western European style of chefs, knives, I preferred those more. So my main thing is I focus on chef knives. Let's start with that. Because I was a chef and I've spent tens of thousands of hours behind a chopping board cutting vegetables, I know what I like in a knife. And I couldn't quite find, it's that age-old story, couldn't quite find what I wanted. So why not make it yourself? And that's what I decided to do. So I wanted to pursue chef knives as a specialist within the knife making genre.
And I think that's quite rare, because if you look around, and I have done just in preparation for our chat, there are lots of different styles of blades and handles and all that, but mostly they are kind of exotics and collectibles and not so many practical.
It was difficult, especially when I became a chef. The selection wasn't there. You know, you could get a Wusthof, you could get a Victorinox, and that was about it. But now there's selection for days. You know, there's two stores in Lifestyle with a great selection of knives. Nothing wrong with them at all. They're fantastic. But there's a little something for everyone.
They're not as good as yours.
It's
one don't of the, be modest.
No, I won't
I'll
be modest.
I'll say it for you.
No, it's one of those things. My knives aren't cheap. I'll put that out there. They're extremely costly. I'm not going to say they're expensive, because expense is a relative term. It's expensive, they're costly, they're handmade. A single knife can take me anywhere from a day to a week to make, from scratch. I do everything in-house by myself, all on my own. So I take a raw piece of steel, I trace it out, I profile it, I heat treat it, I add the handles, I do all the grind, I do everything myself. And I just
even the scabbard,
everything, sheath work, leather work, everything. So I try to do as much as I can in-house. And unfortunately, it's time-consuming and expensive. I can't churn out hundreds. I do 15 to 20 knives a month.
But don't you find people actually like paying a premium for quality?
This is the little niche that I find myself in, is gifting, actually, which I never thought I would. I thought being chef knife-orientated, I'd market chefs. But unfortunately, chefs are on the lower end of the income bracket, I hate to say it. But, you know, there's a lot of people who have all the nice things in the world, but they don't have a unique, one-of-a-kind, handmade piece. And what I've also found that my customers really like when they order a knife is I do a build-along with them. Recently, I had a customer who actually bought a knife for a friend of his. We set up a whole WhatsApp group. And for 3 days, I did daily, almost hourly updates of watching their knife get built. And they loved it. So it's way more personalized than anything else.
Wow. Well, let's take a little musical breather, catch our breath, and we'll be back with David Hula, knife maker to the rich and famous like you, on the flip side. Here's Tame Impala. The Dave Charles Show on Radio Life and Style. It's 25 minutes past 10 o'clock, and I'm in conversation with David Hula, who is a knife maker in Bolito, who makes the most exquisite knives. And Dave, fascinating background to the exercise, but let's talk about the process from the beginning, step by step. How do you forge a knife from the raw steel to the finished blade?
Okay, what I'll do is I'm going to start with a bit of a classification in knife making. People hear knife making, they think forged in fire. I think that's sort of the prevailing thought these days. So that's bladesmithing. So the guys heat up steel in a forge and they beat it with an anvil. What I do is sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum. I do what we call stock removal. So the main reason I do stock removal is I exclusively try to use stainless steels. Whereas bladesmithing, if you see guys hammering out steel, it's generally going to be a carbon steel. So what they'll do is like they're like a tool. So they'll rust or take up a patina if they're not maintained or neglected. So I just like the sort of more stainless steel. It's a little bit more user-friendly for the average person. Nothing wrong with carbon steels. I just prefer stainless. So what I'll do is I get a sheet of steel. The steel I'm using at the moment is a Swedish steel called AEBL. Its industrial applications actually uses as a razor blade steel. So it works fantastically for chef knives. So pretty much I'm making giant razors. So I'll start off with a sheet of steel. I'll trace out my design. I'll cut it out roughly with an angle grinder. Then I'll go all on a big bulk grinder that runs a 1-inch by 2-meter belt. Giant sanding belt. It's got a 2-horsepower motor on it. So it's proper power. It runs on 3-phase power. I grind out the profile of the blade to my outlines, and then I'll generally drill holes for pins, fasteners, depending on the handle configuration. And then we'll go into heat treating, where I've got a kiln in my workshop where I heat it up to 1,050 degrees.
So even though it is this very high-grade industrial steel designed for all sorts of really sharp tools, you still have to give it the treatment.
Yeah. So what happens is the steel comes to us from the factory in an annealed state, as they say, which is soft. So we're able to cut it, grind it, and drill it. Once we get all that shaping out the way, we're actually going to harden the blade ourselves. So I put it into a kiln. It goes in there at 1,050 degrees for about 7 to 15 minutes, depending on the thickness of the steel. And then I'll quench it in oil, which you'll see guys blacksmithing do. We put in the oil and we try not to get the flames because we don't want to burn down our workshop. But then we quench it. And what that does is when we heat up the steel, it puts all the elements and alloys in that steel into solution. So it almost like dissolves the molecules in the steel. And when we put it into the oil, it solidifies that structure. So we try to get the optimum steel structure out of our piece of steel. From there, it generally goes into my freezer overnight. Sounds a bit silly, but what I'm trying to do is pull out any retained austenites in the steel. It's a bit sciencey, but it's just trying to refine the grain structure of the steel so it can take a finer edge. From there, I'll start the grinding process. Freezer overnight, then it gets tempered for two-hour cycles at 200. So what happens is now we've got the steel at its peak hardness, but unfortunately, sometimes it gets too brittle when it's too hard. So we just need to bring it down and soften it up a little bit. So we do a tempering cycle, which sort of brings it down a couple hardness points. And then we start the grinding
process. The tempering is you heat it up again.
Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll take it up to, depending on the steel and the application, we'll take it up to 200 degrees in the furnace again, and we'll stay in there for two-hour cycles. So we'll spend 4 hours tempering. So the thing is, like, it's very difficult to start a blade in the morning and have it finished by the afternoon. So you got it's funny enough, it's almost like working like a kitchen. And that's one of the philosophies I've actually used in my workshop is the backbone of a kitchen is a thing called mise en place. It's a French term for put in place. It means doing your preparation. So the key to any craft besides knife making or anything is you need to know what your next step is and the best way to get towards it. So you need to have your preparation in place. So knife making really is about preparation, preparation, preparation. So I'll start the grinding process, and then I'll heat treat my knives at a full thickness of about 3 mils. And by the time I go to a final edge, it's almost at 0.01 of a mil thickness on the edge. So the very sharp bit. I have to accomplish that by hand. So I do all hand grinding. So I'll start off with a 36 grit, a 60 grit, 120 grit, 220 grit, 600 grit to grind the blade to get it to a nice satin final finish. And then I'll take it all the way back down to a 220 satin finish, which is like a hand sit for a couple hours and you literally hand finish the blade.
You know what you're describing? You're describing something that is so incredible. It's like almost mythical. You know, the legend of King Arthur and the blades, or the Japanese that make these mystical blades. You do the same kind of work here.
The funny thing is, if we had to transport us back 200 years, I'd be the most important person in this town. Because if you wanted a nail, if you wanted a hinge, if you wanted anything metallic, you'd have to go to the village blacksmith and get it manufactured. Yeah. You couldn't just go to the hardware store and buy things. We've forgotten how convenient our life has got.
So technically, you're a modern-day blacksmith.
In a sense.
But a very, very...
specialist one.
Specialized, yeah. Blacksmith.
So I always say, saying knife making is like saying you're a musician. It's a very broad term. You know, there's folder makers, there's survival make, you know, guys who do outdoor specific, kitchen knives, bird and trout, daggers, art knives. The spectrum is huge. It's what I tell people is, you got to find your, there's a little niche within each one.
So you're still pretty much on the knife for the aficionado that uses a knife.
Yes.
Do you do much custom work? When I say custom work, if I came to you and said, Dave, I would love to give my dad something really special, and he enjoys this kind of activity, that kind of, here is a, what sort of material could be used for the handle, and then, you know, what would you use? Would you do that?
So I've done phenomenal jobs like that, actually. We actually did a raffle auction knife. Remember when we had those big fires in Narsna?
Yeah.
One of the schools burnt down. One of the bladesmiths managed to salvage some screws from the wreckage, and he made it into a piece of Damascus. And then I made it into a knife that we raffled off in aid of raising funds for the guys who were affected by the fires. That's just one example. But as you say, custom work, 99% of my work's custom. So it's people phoning me and asking for something specific. Because there are so many options and so much variety, I don't really like to make stock too often. Like, I've got a knife show coming up this weekend.
We're going to talk about that in a moment, because that's really exciting. Mm. Knife shows and generally speaking, the whole mystique around.
Yeah. So most of my work actually really is custom work. You know, one of my favorite ones is I had a customer who, they used to do a lot in a country club in Westville. And they dismantled it, but he managed to get some of the parquet flooring out of it. So we used the parquet flooring on a set of knives for him, his dad, and his brother. You know, it's incorporating and trying to make it as unique to the customer as possible.
So there's something special there.
Yes.
You have a memory wrapped into something that
exactly.
is going to be hopefully treasured for life.
In an ideal world, I don't like designs drawn on a napkin. Dave, can you please make me this?
Yeah.
Generally, what I advise people is, this is my catalog of stuff that I've done. And I can send you thousands of photos of knives to go through. See what design you like. That's the main thing. So the outside profile. Like, I like that design. And then we'll start breaking down into handle materials and things like that. And the options are endless.
Before we get into the show, I just want to ask you, is the world of AI having any influence on your craft?
My job's been around for a couple million years. I think we'll be okay. No, I'm not even kidding. I went with my son, did a school tour to the museum in Durban. And we went there, and we went and you looked at the Homo sapiens making tools. Yeah. And what were they making? A cutting edge. People think the world's most...
But would AI not help you with that process?
It doesn't. It can. I've played around with it. And I've found nothing that... Like, I can't get it to design a knife for me that I'm happy with. It doesn't understand the nuances. Like, AI is great. I use AI for an advanced Google search. If I want to dive into a topic, like, I've recently got a fiber laser to add to my arsenal of skills that I do in my workshop.
Fiber laser?
A fiber laser.
So do you engrave messages on your knives?
So if you look at...
Oh, wow. Sort of almost Celtic design on the...
On the what we call a bolster.
On the bolster.
And then it also does things like, there's a...
Ah,
a brass challenge
saw you
coin.
Had moved into the realm of coins.
So
that's exquisite, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but with that...
Put it on the camera. Can you see? There you go. Can you see this?
You have guys that do this kind of stuff with AI. But now I've partnered up with a local girl, Dusty, and we're trying to do it with as little AI as possible. My thinking is that the human touches is going to become infinitely more valuable in the future. Because everything... unfortunately, I foresee things sort of becoming a bit more grey. There's a thing called AI slop. There's just so much stuff getting churned out that it starts to sort of blend and doesn't really stand out. And I think the human experience will just become infinitely more important going down the line.
It plays into the narrative that we've been talking for quite a long time about experience in terms of the value of any interaction now. People are looking for genuine and experience being paramount. You can buy stuff. There's lots of stuff. But there's very little genuine, exciting, custom-made, experiential. In your case, knife.
See, I won't use AI for any of my work. The thing is, I enjoy my work too much. The funny thing is, I'll constantly have guys trying to say, Dave, you need to scale. You need to get bigger. And it's almost like they're trying to take away the thing that I actually like doing, which is making the knives.
Can you make a decent living out of it?
Depends who you are.
You.
Me. My bills are paid. I'm 6 years in. It's a struggle some weeks. You know, you got to hustle to get the grocery money by Friday. You know, sometimes debit orders bounce. It's the artist's life, but I'm happy in my soul, so I can't really complain about that.
Let's take a musical breather. This is one of your memories. You don't look old enough, quite frankly. Hey, Jethro Tull. Title track of the album Aqualung. Joy off the album Aqualung, the title track. Jethro Tull's Aqualung, a special request from David Hula, who is a knife maker extraordinaire. He happens to be a Bolito, one of the jewels in the crown. And if you are lucky enough to have a Hula knife, you know what I'm talking about. There's a show coming up very shortly, and we're about to chat about it. David, let's talk about the show.
Yes. So this weekend, it's over the Easter weekend. The Friday and the Saturday, we have the annual Durban Easter Knife Show, which is, I think, the second longest running knife show in the country. It's been running for 40 years consecutively over the Easter weekend. Okay, we had a little hiccup over COVID and things like that. But the show's this weekend. It's at the AHA Gateway Hotel. So it's the old food court entrance to Gateway, where the Wave Park and stuff used to be. That's the hotel's on that side there next to Gateway. So the show starts on Friday, 9 o'clock till 5 o'clock. The whole idea is we have a whole bunch of local and a couple guys come in from town, knife makers, who are coming to show their wares. So we have a diverse selection of knives, from folder makers to medium kitchen knives. My one friend there, Devet, he does the whole forged in fire thing. So if you want to chat forged in fire, Devet's your man. He makes his own Damascus. He beats out the steel. He is phenomenal. The kind of work... some of the makers we're going to have there is absolutely incredible. And we'll have Niels van den Berg there, who's one of our most qualified knife makers in the country. He's a ABS mastersmith, so an American bladesmith mastersmith. He's also part of the Knife Makers Guild of South Africa, which I'm also a member of. So we're going to have about 16 exhibitors there. Plus, we're also going to have a few outside of knife making exhibitors. So we'll have Brian Kutsia. He's a phenomenal box maker. So guys, if you're looking to spoil your wife with a nice jewelry box or something like that, Brian's work is, it's breathtaking, the kind of work he does with his jointing and his woodwork. And we'll have knife making suppliers there. So if you're actually interested in starting to make knives, you can actually buy all the materials at the show, from abrasives to handle materials. They have pre-made kits. So if you just want to start making knives, they actually have pre-ground blades with handles, and all you need to do is glue it together, and you can finish it in a basic workshop quite easily. So it's open for those 2 days, the Friday and the Saturday, at the Gateway AHA Gateway Hotel.
And just listening to this now as a member of the public whose interest has been piqued, just thinking about a knife show, if I wanted to drag my beloved along, or members of the family, would they be bored stiff, or would they find it
interesting? No, so the great thing is it's literally at Gateway. So you can make it a family morning. You can send the ladies off to go into Gateway to go ruin your bank account while you go ruin your own bank account at the knife show. But saying that, a lot of ladies, they love the beauty of these knives. Some of these knives are incredibly stunning, with vast colors. You know, for example, like there's a little one I've made there, which is quite striking in color. It's not something you would see very often. So they actually love the little details, and they love looking at the intricacies of knives, especially with the folders and things like that. So I've actually seen quite a few wives get quite a kick out of being there.
Wow. So it's an opportunity to get
it
to
is. It's something so different and out of the ordinary for most people. For me, I sort of take it for granted, not knife making. You know, it's my everyday job. But for a lot of people, it completely blows their brain to see what the human hands are capable of.
And can you just walk in off the street, or do you have to book?
No, the tickets, there is an entrance fee at the door. I think it's 80 Rand. So there is a small entrance fee just to help us cover the costs. Obviously, with us, most of us being artist types, we try to do these things on a shoestring budget. We try to promote it as best we can to get as many people coming through as possible. But at the end of the day, we sort of just cover the cost of the show. So there's a small entry fee, but it goes a long way to helping us keep the show running from year to year.
So just once again, when is it and where is it?
Okay, so it's this week, Friday and Saturday at the AHA Gateway Hotel. Starts at 9 o'clock both days. On Friday, it finishes at 5 p.m. and on Saturday, it finishes at 4 p.m.
If you're at all interested in the craft, the art, the magic of the blade in good hands, of course. I'm talking about experts, the masters. This is your opportunity to get together with many of those. If you're keen to start, I'm sure you'll find lots of advice and help, because they seem to be a nice bunch of guys. The few knife makers I know have been really nice guys. My special guest, David Hula, is probably the king of the castle. David, it's been absolutely joyful chatting with
David's
you.
David's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And I wish you huge success with the knife show. And you got to come back in. There's so much more to talk about.
Oh, no, we could chat. I've got topics for days we could chat about.
You've got an open invitation, and I look forward to the next one.
Perfect. Thank you, Dave.